It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Yes, it is 1900 UTC. Sorry about the little extra tones there. I was just running to pull the tea out of the water. Well, I guess strain the tea out. Tea leaves out for some fresh ginger may. It's a lovely tea. It's great. So, anyway, buy it at your nearest Chinese supermarket. Greetings, Efong and Ouroboroso. Fantastic. Glad you guys are all here. Let's jump into the news. Of course, we got to start off with
world news.
That's right. Let's get into it. So first up, Russian spy chief flies into Belarus and shows support for the embattled leader. So the head of Russia's SVR Foreign Intelligence Service made a surprise visit to Belarus on Thursday in what looked like a show of support by Moscow for veteran leader Alexander Lukashenko, a close ally who is under pressure to step down. Welcome, X1. TV footage released by Belarusian state showed Sergei Naryshkin, the head of Russia's SVR, smiling broadly as Lukashenko told him the two countries were facing a difficult situation and had few international allies. In the latest uncompromising rhetoric from Lukashenko's government, the Belarusian interior minister said the protests were evolving into a terroristic threat, which is a common tactic. We've seen that here in the U.S. and also down there in Nigeria. Naryshkin's visit is likely to be seen in China and Bolivia. All over the world they do this. Naryshkin's visit is likely to be seen as a show of support from Moscow from the Belarusian leader ahead of Monday, when an opposition ultimatum for Lukashenko to step down, which he shows no sign of heeding, expires. He's faced over 2 months of protests over an August 9th election victory protesters say was rigged, thanked Naryshkin for regularly sharing Russian intelligence information with Belarus. President Vladimir Putin has pledged to send in special Russian riot troops if necessary and granted Lukashenko a loan, while Russian state TV specialists have flown in to help keep state TV functioning. Hey, fantastic. It's always fun messing around with Jack and anon radio and stuff. I don't know. Anyway, if you want to hang out, this show's live, so you can... unless this is a recording in the future because I've screwed up somehow, it's October 22nd, 2020. And if you want to chat live, you can go to com, you just SSH over to SDF, type COM at the prompt, hit enter, and boom, you will get dropped into com. You press G for go to, and then you type anon radio, all one word. Ta-da! You are in the world of com. It's a lot of fun. And you can chat with people live during the show. There's also something I want to mention. There's also Bboard. Super great. That's where a lot of announcements are made. And the real fun magic is that you can go to anonradio.net and see the schedule. There's so many great shows that happen on anonradio.net. There's not enough time to talk about them all. But last night, there was an amazing second part of an interview during OpenVoIP. It's a vintage comp show. And then, also, I cannot have a ad break without talking about the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. He's the whole reason I know what Ginger May is and what tea can be. It's amazing. So, yeah, definitely check out the Dubious Goals Committee. There might be marmots. There could be golf balls. There's usually Girlfriend Vietnam. Oh, yeah. What's that? Domestic news. I don't know. We'll get to domestic news in a minute. Let's jump through a couple of more world news stories. It's world around. Russia and Iran obtained U.S. voter data in a bid to sow unrest before the election, FBI warns. Russia and Iran have obtained some U.S. voting registration information and are attempting to sow unrest in the upcoming election, the government's National Intelligence Director said in a rare news conference Wednesday night. We've already seen Iran sending spoofed emails designed to intimidate voters, incite social unrest, and damage President Trump, said John Ratcliffe, the director of national intelligence. The FBI director, Chris Wray, also spoke, saying the U.S. will impose costs on any foreign countries interfering in the 2020 election. Wray also warned against buying into misinformation about election results. You should be confident your vote counts. Early unverified claims to the contrary should be viewed with a healthy dose of skepticism. Democrats immediately took issue with Ratcliffe's emphasis that Iran was sowing disinformation to harm Trump, characterizing the intelligence director as a partisan hack. Ratcliffe is a former Republican congressman, and Democrats have been critical of his choice to selectively declassify documents to help Trump. Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader, said on Wednesday night that during a classified briefing he received on the interference, "I had the strong impression it was much rather to undermine confidence in elections and not aimed at any particular figure, but rather to undermine the very wellspring of our democracy." Hey, sounds like Ouroboroso is going to be broadcasting on radio soon. That's going to be cool. Welcome to the family. So let's keep on rolling. That was from The Guardian. Now we're going to go to Reuters. The EU is imposing sanctions on Russian military intelligence chief. The EU imposed sanction on the head of Russia's military intelligence, Igor Kostyukov. Kostyukov. I'll post that in calm because it's a weird one. Or it's one that I'm not saying very well. And in another Russian on Thursday, accusing them of stealing Angela Merkel's emails in 2015, hacking attack on the German parliament. Russia in May denied the accusations as a hackneyed story, and said the EU lacked evidence. The sanctions on the head of the GRU, military intelligence agency, follow similar asset freezes and travel bans imposed last week on officials close to President Vladimir Putin in response to the alleged poisoning of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. And we talked about that quite a bit on the show. Ubuntu Studio. I had to check that out. And apparently, hello, Ratsu. I don't know if I said hi to you, but I see no piss take from me ever. And I was like, hey, I guess something's happening. Keep on rolling. Yeah, that's, hold on. Do you want me to find that story? It's not in my list. Just so you know, tune into Myocyte tonight at 0100 UTC. All right. Looks like we got a user submission. We got Ouroboroso, copy link, coming in with a world news story. We'll add that on to the end of the show. All right. Let's keep on rolling. We got so much news. So here's one. Asafoetida, the smelly spice India loves but never grew. This is coming to us from the BBC, and we're trying... Today, I'm trying to intermix not as, like, oh my god, the world's going to end stories, because every day there are thousands of great things that happen and thousands of bad things that happen, and it's almost always, the bad stuff's almost always more well reported and usually impacts people more. So let's keep on going. So check it out. Last week, scientists planted about 800 saplings of the plant in Lahaul and Spiti, a cold desert nestled in the Himalayan mountains exactly 2 years after India's Council of Scientific and Industrial Research imported 6 varieties of seeds from Iran. "We are confident it'll work," said Dr. Ashok Kumar, one of the scientists who painstakingly germinated the seeds in a lab. He says this was necessary because for every 100 seeds, only 2 sprout. The plant, it turns out, has a vexing habit of going dormant. It goes to sleep to adapt to harsh conditions, Dr. Kumar says. Asafoetida, or hing as it's commonly known in India, is a perennial flowering plant that largely grows in the wild. It thrives in dry soil and temperatures under 35°C, so India's tropical plateaus and plains, humid coasts, and heavy monsoons rely on much of the country for hing farming. Instead, Indians rely on imports mostly from Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan, worth more than $100 million in 2019. This is surprising news for many Indians who would argue that hing is inherently Indian. For many Hindus and Jains who don't eat onion and garlic because of dietary restrictions, hing's pungency makes it an ideal substitute. I use it in all my dolls, and I don't cook them with onion or garlic, says Miriam Rochelle, food writer and author of The Flavor of Spice. When you have Hing in your food, that tiny whiff of it just tastes so great. I'm going to have to try this out. Anyway, that's called asafoetida, or Hing. Boop. Put that in calm, because it's a weird sounding. It's hard. Weird, sounds weird coming out of my mouth, anyway. All right, let's run through some more headlines. I'm taking too long. Oh, Janes don't eat roots, as the root is the base of the plant. Thanks, Ouroboroso. Appreciate it. Ah, that's so cool. All right, international donors pledged nearly $600 million to support displaced Rohingya on Thursday, succeeding in bridging a huge gap in funding for hundreds of thousands of refugees. Britain, the U.S., and the European Union organized the virtual conference along with the United Nations Refugee Agency, aiming to meet a target of $1 billion in funding for 2020, less than half of which had been raised. The U.S., the largest single donor, announced nearly $200 million in new funds, while the EU pledged about $113 million, and Britain about $60 million. A number of other countries also contributed. The international community has demonstrated strong commitment to the humanitarian response with its announcement of funding today totaling $587 million. That's from the UN High Commissioner, Filippo Grandi. More than 730,000 Rohingya members of a persecuted Muslim minority fled Myanmar in 2017 for neighboring Bangladesh following a military crackdown. Oh, sorry. Hi and goodbye, Nikolagi. Sorry if I missed you. Yeah, so this is really cool. All right. Well, of course, as I mentioned earlier, Nigeria is still in the news. Yesterday we reported that they showed up and the military just showed up and started shooting people. Well, now he's getting some heat. Nigeria's president, Muhammadu Buhari, has been criticized for his muted response after security forces opened fire on people protesting police brutality in Lagos on Tuesday, drawing international condemnation. Security forces shot live ammunition to disperse crowds who had gathered in defiance of a government curfew. Amnesty International says at least 12 people died in the shooting in the Liki and Alawasa areas of the city. And from reports that I read on other sites, these are like nicer parts of town too. So yeah, this is very interesting. Nigerian authorities denied they were fatalities, and the army said reports that its soldiers were at the scene and shot protesters were false. So, you really know something wild and not so good is happening down there. So, I hope that light is shined, the truth comes to light, and everyone can find justice. That's from The Guardian if you want to read more. BBC News also has a nice little story here. Rescued endangered Loa water frogs have 200 offspring. Hooray! So 14 Loa water frogs, which is Telmatobus dencoi, were airlifted to the zoo in 2019 after they were found in a muddy puddle, all that was left of their habitat in Chile's Atacama Desert. Herpetologists managed to nurse 12 of them back to health. Earlier this month, the frogs successfully mated. The rescue mission was launched last year after the herpetologist Andres Cherrier found that the stream outside of the city of Kalama, the only place where the Lao water frogs are known to live, had dried up. The 14 specimens left in a muddy puddle were dehydrated and malnourished, and with their habitat threatened by illegal water extraction for mining, agriculture, and real estate development, the decision was taken to transfer them 1,500 kilometers to the south of Chile's National Zoo in the capital, Santiago. it is, hold on, we're going to go to dictionary.com or something like that. Let's see. Herpetology is the study of amphibians and reptiles. So it's insert, paste that in, boop. There you go. Put the word into com for more information. All right. We're going long, as usual, so I'm just going to go through the headlines real quick for the remaining international stories I've got. Four Mexican drug cartels, top buyers and traffickers of Colombian cocaine, officials are saying. In Bogota, Mexico, from Bogota, Reuters Bogota office, Mexico's Sinaloa, Jalisco, Nuevo Generacion, Zetas, and Beltran Levaya drug cartels are the top buyers and traffickers of cocaine produced by criminal groups in Colombia, including current and foreign leftist rebels, according to a high-ranking Colombian security official. The country at the northern tip of South America is one of the world's top producers of cocaine, largely consumed by consumers in the U.S. and Europe. Wow. Let's see. Next up, BBC News is reporting coronavirus. Sweden's isolated elderly are urged to rejoin society. Swedes aged over 70 and others at risk groups should now follow the same coronavirus guidelines as the rest of the population, authorities say. Sweden previously advised those groups to avoid all close contact with people they didn't live with, but Sweden's public health chief said self-isolation had taken a toll on the elderly. The country had not imposed tough rules seen elsewhere in Europe. Sweden's infection rate is rising, but other parts of Europe are hit harder. A second lockdown is in force in the Czech Republic. Belgium, the Netherlands, France, and the UK are also hotspots, as countries generally scramble to make more intensive care beds available. Lebanon has a little bit of good news. Lebanese veteran politician Saad al-Hariri was named prime minister for a fourth time on Thursday and pledged to form a new government to tackle the country's worst crisis since its 1975 to 1990 civil war. After his nomination, Hariri said he would quickly form a cabinet of specialists to bring in economic and financial reforms set out in a French plan to get foreign aid. But he faces major challenges to navigate Lebanon's secretarian politics to agree a cabinet which must then fix a mounting list of woes: a banking crisis, currency crash, rising poverty, and state debts. Oh. All right, hurry up, Marcus. Quit thinking about stuff and just read. No, just kidding. The BBC's got something here that I thought was important to note. Poland abortion, top court bans almost all terminations. So Poland's abortion laws were already among the strictest in Europe, but the Constitutional Tribunal's ruling will mean almost a total ban. Once the decision comes into effect, terminations will only be allowed in cases of rape or incest or if the mother's health is at risk. Rights groups had urged the government not to increase restrictions. The Council of Europe's Commissioner for Human Rights said the day marked a sad day for women's rights. Removing the basis for almost all legal abortions in Poland amounts to a ban and violates human rights, Dunja Mijatovic wrote on Twitter. A legal challenge against the 1993 law permitting abortion in cases of severe fetal disabilities, which accounts for 98% of terminations carried out in Poland, was launched by MPs from the ruling Nationalist Law and Justice Party last year. A majority of the court's judges were nominated by the same party. So pretty rough there. Hearts go out to all the people who will suffer in Poland. Oh, excuse me. Hold on. Sorry about that. My allergy pill has not quite kicked in. All right. Well, we'll just, never enough time. We got, you know what? We're going to do this. Here we go. Spain is suspending judicial reform that upset Brussels. So Spain's government on Thursday froze its proposed controversial reform of a top legal body that critics, including Brussels, had warned could undermine the judicial system's independence. So this reform would have changed the way appointments are made to the General Council of the Judiciary, which is responsible for naming judges and ensuring the independence of both courts and judges. This is good news there, and that's from France 24. And China and Germany are heading for superpower status as U.S. influence wanes, says Putin. And this is from Moscow. The era when the U.S. and Russia decided the world's most important questions is in the past, Vladimir Putin said on Thursday, saying China and Germany were now heading for superpower status. Addressing a meeting of the Valde Discussion Club, Putin suggested that the role of the U.S. had waned, along with that of Britain and France, while Beijing and Berlin, in terms of political and economic weight, were heading for superpower status. If Washington was not prepared to discuss global problems with Moscow, Russia stood ready to have that discussion with other nations, said Putin, who was speaking via video link. He said Washington could no longer lay claim to exceptionalism and questioned why it would want to. So that's very good. It'll be interesting. And the photo that the Reuters chose to use is pretty interesting because it's the most dumpy, like, he looks kind of like an old Russian dude in this photo, as opposed to like a healthy, virile youngster or something. Anyway, we've got too much news, more than I can use. That's what happens. But you know what we're going to do right now? We're going to play some Beatles because, heck, I like them and they're fun. And it'll hopefully lighten the mood a little bit. This is off of Abbey Road. It's called She Came In Through the Bathroom Window.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right, and it is Thursday. Don't let Tuesday on the something for me fool ya. It is Thursday, and we've only got about 7 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee kicks off. That's a fun little show we'll have. It's about 30 minutes long. And of course, don't forget Myosite. That's coming up later tonight. Or early tomorrow, depending on where you are in the world. Everything on SDF, or excuse me, on Anon Radio, powered by SDF, is done using UTC. So get used to it. It's universal time, and that's where we're going. Hey, microphone issues. Don't pull on the plugs while you're trying to talk. Sorry about that. I did want to mention the story that was brought up in chat because, heck, if there's one thing, we want to encourage participation. This is from The Guardian. Doctors in Seoul, South Korea are calling for flu vaccinations to be paused after 25 deaths. South Korean officials refused on Thursday to suspend a seasonal influenza inoculation effort. So keep that in mind. This is influenza, not COVID vaccines. Despite growing calls for a halt, including an appeal from a key group of doctors after the deaths of at least 25 of those vaccinated, health authorities said they found no direct links between the deaths and the vaccines. At least 22 of the dead, including a 17-year-old boy, were part of a campaign to inoculate 19 million teenagers and senior citizens for free, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency said. The number of deaths has increased, but our team sees low possibility that deaths resulted from the shots. South Korea ordered a fifth more flu vaccines this year to ward off what it calls a twindemic, or the prospect that people with flu develop coronavirus complications and overburden hospitals in winter. I understand and regret that people are concerned about the vaccine, said Health Minister Park Nung-hoo, who confirmed the free program would carry on. So, it's going to be very interesting. It's very sad that people are having this reaction to the flu vaccine. The flu vaccine is pretty important. Keeps a lot of people out of the hospital and keeps people safe. So, bit of a bummer there. Real sad. We've got about 5 minutes. So that means instead of talking about domestic news, I've got a story that I think deserves this time just because it's pretty neat. Also, be sure you drink tea. It's so good. I've got this Jinjin Mei, and it's been the best. Also, matcha green tea is delicious. if you're into it. Oh, that tea is so good. Jinjin Mei. Buy it now. All right. This is from Reason. So if you go to Reason.com, Reason is a magazine, but they have a neat little story here. When encryption was a crime, and this is something everyone in Anon Radio land probably can appreciate, but I wanted to read it anyway. So in the 90s, it was a lot of encryption was illegal, or it was a military thing. So check it out. In 1977, a team of cryptographers at MIT made an astonishing discovery, a mathematical system for encrypting secret messages so powerful that it had the potential to make government spying effectively impossible. Before the MIT team could publish a description of how this system worked, the National Security Agency made it known that doing so could be considered a federal crime. The 1976 Arms Export Control Act, AECA, made it illegal to distribute munitions in other countries without a license, including cryptography. The penalty for violating AECA was up to 10 years in prison or a fine of up to $1 million. It was the beginning of the crypto wars, the legal and public relations battle between the intelligence community and privacy activists over the rights of citizens to use end-to-end encryption. Many of those who were involved in the crypto wars were associated with the cypherpunk movement, a community of hackers, hobbyists, and computer scientists, which the mathematician Eric Hughes once described as cryptology activists. The crypto wars continue to this day. On October 11, 2020, U.S. Attorney General William P. Barr issued a joint statement with officials from six other countries that implored tech companies not to use strong end-to-end encryption in their products so that law enforcement agencies can access the communications of their customers. Of course, we also know that means it's because the government would really like to know anything and everything you say or do or communicate with anyone about, and if a business encrypts it and can't read it, they can't compel them. So, yeah, Big Brother, live and well, Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning were not just bad apples. Those are real hero, information heroes for our day. And the guy that did Secure Drop, that he hung himself. I forget his name right now. I'm sorry. We've only got about 2 minutes to go. Let's just say that it's a great story. It's a significant. It's a lot longer than we have time for. There's also a video that's about 10 minutes long. If you'd prefer to consume it that way, at Reason.com. Let me just real quick be sure and remind you there is a debate tonight at like 9 o'clock. James Dolan, sorry. At 9 o'clock, I think. Is it 9 o'clock? There's a debate tonight. Oh, Aaron Swartz is who I was thinking of. But the U.S. debates are on tonight. Check your local TV listings for the time. But it's like 8 or 9 o'clock in the U.S. So check that out if you haven't voted yet, or if you just want to know what they're going to say. They are going to be able to cut the mics off, so that'll be good. All right, I'm going to read headlines until the music plays. U.S. ICE officers use torture to make Africans sign own deportation orders. Cameroonian officials say officials choked, beat, and threatened to kill them as lawyers tell of a pre-elective removal drive. Then we need prison time. Purdue's belated guilty plea gets skeptical reaction. Legal drug dealers Purdue started the national opioid crisis, but they get to keep their money because they have lawyers. You can read about that at The Guardian. Post-election violence kills at least 10 in Guinea. At least 10 people have been killed in post-election violence in Guinea following elections over the weekend. Even though final results remain unclear, the opposition presidential candidate Salo Dalian Diallo has declared himself the winner. And that's all the time we got. I want to hear the music. Have you heard this? Have you heard about this?
Well,
then I'll play it for you.
That means that our time's come to an end.
I want
to
hear the music.
Thanks
I want to hear
listening.
The music.
We'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday.
7.